Hello, and thanks for joining us. My name is Yante, and I am part of the investment specialist team here at ClearBridge Investments. With me today is Shane Hurst, portfolio manager across all of ClearBridge's listed infrastructure strategies.
Hi, Anne. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Shane. Today, we'll be talking about infrastructure's performance in recent years, as well as opportunities. In recent years, infrastructure returns on an absolute basis have lagged previous years. In 2022, whilst the defensive nature of infrastructure has delivered as the asset class outperformed global equities during a very volatile year for equity markets, the returns were still flattish. Last year and through to this year, we saw global equities perform strongly with the Magnificent Seven taking off, but infrastructure has lagged. So Shane, what has been driving infrastructure underperformance on an absolute as well as relative basis for the past about 18 to 24 months?
Yeah, well, it's certainly been a very volatile 18 months in our sector, Yan. And you know, when you think about 2023, it was really all about the speed in which bond yields were rising, both real and nominal. So it was the fastest speed we've seen in 40 years. And that obviously provided a headwind, especially for our most defensive exposures, our utility exposures. You couple that with the lack of breadth in the market in 2023. And when I say lack of breadth, it's you know, only a few stocks driving the overall return of the market. What that meant was there was massive bifurcation. So, you know, the general MSCI was up around about 24%, the equal weighted MSCI up about 16%, but the global utilities MSCI subsect was only up 1.5%. So that really provided kind of another headwind as people kind of flocked towards these magnificent seven themed AI stocks. So what really worked, you know, I guess, you know, anything leveraged to beta, transport infrastructure, roads, rail and airports, especially in Europe, performed really well. In fact, utilities themselves in Europe did better than their US counterparts. What were the worst performers? Really, those US utilities that kind of bore the brunt of that bifurcation, where you know, the US market itself, you know, has the greatest amount of thematically driven stocks around the world. So certainly a tough period of time. But as we've seen and as we saw at the end of last year, as bond yields started to level off, we started to see some of those true characteristics of infrastructure come through.
Okay, so the rise in real yields is not actually new to financial markets.
No.
What happened to the infrastructure asset class the last time you saw such yield-driven volatility?
Yeah, no, so you're absolutely right. I mean, clearly as central banks tighten monetary policy or they ease monetary policy or other factors creep into risk, that moves bond yields up or down. But you know, to your point, back in 2016 into 2017, we actually saw real yields trend sideways, kind of range bound for a period of time, and that really gave infrastructure the opportunity to outperform global equities during that period of time. As we got into 2018, and I don't know if you remember back to this period, but you saw bond yields move up as the Fed and other central banks started to increase rates to slow growth. And so what that meant was, again, a similar type reaction to what we saw last year. You saw defensive exposures underperform, more cyclical GDP exposures perform better. And then as we got to the end of that 2018 period and into 2019, bond yields flattened, similar to what we saw last year, eased a little, and then we started to see infrastructure and utilities outperform global equities again. So we think that playbook is very relevant to what we saw last year, and ultimately this year will lead to strong performance out of the asset class, probably honestly towards the back end.
So it is because of the narrow market breadth as well as, you know, the speed and the rise of real yields in 2023 that market pricing has been challenging for infrastructure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are the fundamentals of these infrastructure companies still intact, and what are catalysts for fundamentals to catch up?
Yeah, no, look, there's no doubt. I mean, the fundamentals are intact. In fact, I would say the space itself, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, is one of the most attractive it's been in certainly in my investing lifetime, as they say. So you know, really, what are the catalysts for that re-rate or market pricing reflecting fundamentals? I think the first point you absolutely nailed, which is bond yields stabilizing. Once we see bond yields stabilizing, as we have seen, I think the true characteristics will start to come through. You are seeing market breadth start to expand. There's no doubt you've seen that over the last month or two. And with that, you've seen sectors like utilities in the US perform actually better than others in the market. And then look, the final point is there are some absolutely fantastic thematics flowing through the space and providing tailwinds. They include decarbonisation, localising supply chain, and just the explosion of data demand, which has been propelled forward by AI. Once they start to come through in cash flows, earnings and dividends, we think that will catalyse a change in market prices, and certainly we think that will lead to strong performance going forward.
Okay, so turning to the macro environment for just a bit. So economic data has surprised to the upside so far in 2024. Yeah, yeah. What if central banks don't cut rates as soon as the market expects, or the magnitude of the rate cut is less than market expectations?
Yeah, look, it is an interesting dynamic, and you tend to get that dynamic at the end of a rate hiking cycle. You're in this period of indecision. You know, the market thinks there's going to be a soft landing. They don't know, but they hope it's going to be a soft landing. And often it's not. It ends in a meaningful slowdown. But if you do continue to see strong inflation data, strong employment data, which has really driven that more optimistic view on the world, and the Fed doesn't cut rates, central banks don't cut rates, that will likely be a continued headwind for the space. Do we think that's likely? No. And there's a number of reasons for that. Firstly, not all economies around the world are the same. If you think about the US economy, it's probably the hottest in terms of developed market economies. If you look at some of the key stats, especially the economic stats, what you're seeing in the employment data is still very strong supply, and that's driven by actually immigration at the moment. So as that continues to occur, the Fed will be comfortable that the economy won't overheat and will be more concerned about that restrictive policy, and then so will likely continue to cut anyway. You think about Europe, totally different situation, right? I mean, Europe is in a market where growth really hasn't shown a hell of a lot of strength. In employment is far lower in certain parts of Europe, especially Northern Europe. And so the likelihood of deeper cuts and cuts that go for a longer period of time is far more likely. So, you know, I think ultimately for us, it still plays into the strengths of infrastructure and those key themes, which are multi-decade themes. But just like all markets, there may be some short-term volatility.
Speaking of attributes, one of the key attributes of infrastructure is the pass-through of inflation, or the inflation protection.
Yeah.
Is this happening? Is the inflation pass-through working well for infrastructure companies?
Yeah, so I mean, it is one of the key attributes. It's probably one of the most unique attributes, I would say, of infrastructure. And certainly when you compare it to property or commodities, it's very unique. The reason it is so unique is that you are able to mechanically pass through that inflation through regulatory constructs, through concession contracts, and just contracting in general. And so how does that work? If you're a regulated utility, you can adjust your asset base for inflation. Your cost of capital actually adjusts for inflation. If you're a toll road, an airport, a rail company, and just think about, you know, you driving down the one of the toll roads here in Sydney, every period, it can be quarterly, it can be yearly, you'll see an adjustment up for inflation or in fact down. So very mechanical pass-through of inflation. Has it been working well? The answer is absolutely yes. You think about 2022 and into 2023 where we had that higher inflation, that was passed through to customers. And as a result of that, the true benefit of infrastructure as as an asset class that can pass through in inflation really shone through. Now, just the final point to make as it concerns our portfolio, we talk about around about 90% of the portfolio able to pass through directly or indirectly inflation. So, we are very, very comfortable with how that's been working.
So when you talk about the inflation pass-through, are you seeing that flowing through into companies' earnings profiles?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So it is flowing through into earnings profiles, certainly into pricing. So when you think about it, I think there is a misconception out there that higher inflation leads to higher dividends. That doesn't always occur, but it does tend to flow through into higher earnings profiles. The reason it doesn't flow through to dividends, and I think that's a common misconception, as I just mentioned, is that extra inflation, that extra capital that's being collected by the utility or the infrastructure company may be used for reinvestment and not paid back to shareholders. But certainly we have seen it pass through to customers.
So speaking of dividends,
yeah.
The ClearBridge Global Infrastructure Income Strategy targets a total return outcome built on the foundation of a 5% average dividend yield over a cycle.
Yeah.
So from a dividends point of view, has the rise in bond yields or increasing financing costs impacted the dividend profiles of infrastructure companies that you've seen, including dividend growth rates into the future?
Yeah, so a great question. So let's break that down a little bit. So financing costs, as we know, have gone up. Bond yields have gone up. What hasn't gone up, though, are the margins that these infrastructure utility companies have been issuing their debt for. So that's still remained quite tight, which is great, right? So when you think about the impact on dividends, let's break it down by assets. Transport infrastructure, we've actually seen quite strong patronage, strong volumes, reasonably strong pricing. As you've seen, services improve. And that post-COVID resurgence of passenger traffic. We've also seen volumes improve in the haulage rail companies like our US rail companies. And so their ability to generate excess cash and pay dividends has actually been getting better, not worse. So from their perspective, you know, certainly there's been no issue. When you think about your regulated utilities, they are able to pass through higher costs through their cost of capital. Just like we talked about inflation, they're also able to pass through higher debt costs to the ultimate customer. And so as a result of that, you know, they certainly haven't had any, you know, meaningful impact at all in passing that through. And as a result of that, it hasn't impinged their ability to pay dividends. I would say one thing that kind of creeps into this conversation when you think about financing is the huge growth profile these companies have, you know, the huge amount of capital that needs to be spent in a positive way. And, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about that in a moment. But because there is a call for capital to fund that growth going forward, our companies have been coming to market to issue equity. They've been able to do that very successfully, limited discounts or very small discounts rather, and they've been able to do it in a very seamless way with strong share price performance the next day. What that's meant is they've been able to finance their growth through greater equity issuance, greater debt issuances, and the dividend profiles have been certainly maintained.
That's great. So turning to portfolio allocation, why do you think investors should increase infrastructure in their portfolio? And do you think now is the right time?
Yeah, so, I mean, look, we think there are a number of reasons you should own infrastructure in general. So the first is obviously diversification and downside protection. And we talk about this often with clients, but the income strategy itself have a downside beta of 0.5. So very good downside. Very good downside protection. You know, I guess you haven't really needed it over the last 12 to 18 months because markets have been going up, but it's always what you need in your back pocket, certainly as you go through a volatile period of economic data. And we think certainly with such tight monetary policy, you may see that go.
Just to clarify, so yeah. The 0.5 downside, that's in local currency?
That is in local currency, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. No, thanks for clarifying that. So, yeah, no. So, you know, the first point is diversification, so that downside beta. I think the ability to pass through inflation that you hit on are absolutely crucial for infrastructure. And certainly as we see inflation, the risk of inflation moving higher again, that ability to pass through inflation is absolutely crucial. Look, I think the final point in terms of why you would need infrastructure and why you would hold it is it's really an essential service. So, you know, again, when you think forward to the market that we may or may not be in, you want assets that will perform well in downside markets, in upside markets, in different types of economic cycles. Infrastructure is that asset class. People need water, people need gas, people need electricity. And so it is an essential service, very different to most industrial assets, which will obviously move up and down in cycles. So they're the key reasons. So why, you know, I guess the key question you asked here is why now? You know, why would we want to own infrastructure now? And there's you know, a number of absolutely key reasons. Firstly, when you think about the forward return profile of these assets, in our modeling, and this is just our expectation of forward returns through our modeling, so it's clearly a forecast, it's not a guarantee, both the value and the income strategy have an IRR or an expected return on equity of over 14% per annum over the next 5 years. And that's a forecast out of our models with no adjustments in place, but an indication of the value within the portfolio. You know, we talked about bond yields having flattened and certainly trending in a range post hikes by central banks last year. And again, you know, when you think about what happened to bond yields and infrastructure performance in 2018, we think you're going to see that again in 23 and 24. So as bond yields flatten, maybe come off, we expect infrastructure to outperform broader equities. I think, you know, the final reason is there are such fantastic thematics underpinning the growth of infrastructure and especially utilities that are just underappreciated. So let's just really briefly talk about some of those. You know, firstly, decarbonisation, $36 trillion of clean energy infrastructure expected to be spent over the next 30 to 40 years. Utilities and infrastructure at the forefront of actually making that happen. So that's the first one. Second one is the localizing of supply chains. And that's really benefiting countries like the US who have started to shy away from importing goods from places like China and want to manufacture their own goods domestically. There've been domestic incentives put in place. Whether they be CHIPS Act in the case of developing microchips, or whether it's the Inflation Reduction Act, what we have seen clearly is that incentive to domestically manufacture. Why is that good for infrastructure and utilities? They need to supply electricity, gas, water. They need to also facilitate the logistics around a lot of these new manufacturing facilities. And again, very positive for the local areas that we would invest in. Companies like Entergy in the US, Southern Company in the US, OGE, all beneficiaries of this. And look, the final point, I'm sure we'll dive into this in more detail a little bit later, is just the explosion of data growth and how that's been supercharged by AI. What does that mean? Well, it means that to power the new demands for data, you need increased power generation. You need capital spend on energy infrastructure. You need new generation, and that tends to be renewables. And then finally, it will benefit companies like our tower assets that need to upgrade their infrastructure for increased mobile data needs. So, you know, three kind of key reasons why we think now is the right time to invest in the space. Certainly, it has underperformed over the last 12 to 18 months. But, you know, for us, really the future looks very, very bright.
So you mentioned about the value, the infrastructure value and infrastructure income strategy, having an IRR of over 14% per annum for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
So what gives you the confidence that the portfolio, the investments, that the holdings are able to achieve such returns through the cycle and potentially even a growing dividend profile?
Yeah. So, I mean, they are our internal forecasts. And so that's the first reason we gain confidence. You know, we have a very deep investment process. We spend a lot of time with the companies that we invest in. We've been investing since 2006. So, you know, a long track record of investing. And this is one of the most attractive levels we've seen since 2011. So that's the first reason. I think, you know, we've talked about the thematics. We've talked about the strength of the space at the moment. I think that's another. You know, really it is one of the most it's probably the best place I've seen both infrastructure and utility assets in my investing career. Balance sheets are as good as they've ever been. Certainly, both their ability to issue equity for growth is absolutely crucial for what we see as a huge growth cycle for infrastructure utilities going forward. And they are able to do that, and they have proven to be able to do that, especially in places like the UK last year. Severn Trent was an example of that. And then we talked about the tightness of margins, which has helped certainly issue debt at very attractive levels. I'd say the last point to make is, you know, these businesses have got higher and higher quality over the last 5 to 7 years. So they've sold their non-core assets. They've simplified their businesses. And so as a result of that, you know, these are leaner, meaner infrastructure and utility businesses who we think are far more likely to achieve those returns, those very attractive returns through a cycle.
All right, so lastly, Shane, so we've talked about the multi-decade themes such as decarbonization. Are there any infrastructure sectors that are looking very attractive for 2024? Any new emerging themes?
Yeah, so let's just talk about the themes that we know about. And, you know, just to recap, obviously decarbonization, you know, trillions of dollars expected to be invested over the next 3 to 4 decades into energy infrastructure, into renewables, into new forms of areas like hydrogen, new technologies, you know, all different areas which will basically facilitate a lower carbon world. And infrastructure utilities are at the forefront. So that's a massive theme. Localizing of supply chains, especially in places like the US, as we've seen increased immigration, as we've seen greater incentives put in place by policymakers, is a big, big driver of growth and really attracts capital from all around the world to places like the south of the US, so southeast in particular. So, you know, again, a huge theme. But in terms of emerging themes, you know, we touched on it before, but obviously, you know, when you think about, you know, one of the big themes over the last 2-3 years in the markets, it's AI, it's data growth. And you know, what's really important and really a second derivative of this is what is going to power that growth in data demand. And the answer is obviously generation, power generation. And so we are seeing that as very much an emerging theme. You know, where does it hit? As I mentioned briefly before, increased in power demand, increasing power infrastructure. So whether it be transmission, whether it be distribution, extra infrastructure around these power plants and data centers is absolutely needed. Greater amounts of renewable. I'll touch on that in a moment because that's really, really crucial. And then finally, you know, other areas like towers, which will benefit from greater upgrade cycles. Obviously, a little bit different to utilities, but certainly a beneficiary from this greater demand for data. But how big is the opportunity? Just to frame it, over the next 5 years, we're likely to generate twice the amount of data as we generated over the previous 10 years. So, yeah, massive amounts of data are being generated. What does that mean for power need from data centers globally? Well, it means, you know, that power need will grow at roughly 14% per annum over the next 3 years. So massive amounts of growth. You add in the likely AI kicker to that and that real supercharging impact, because as we know, you know, AI chips tend to use about 6 to 7 times more than normal data center CPU chips. And that will increase that growth in power demand from around about that 14% to around about 20%. So massive amounts of growth in power demand needed globally. But that's certainly not the whole picture, right? The whole picture is what does that do to the resource in the US? What does that do to the growth in power generation in places like the US, Europe, et cetera? And it's actually quite large when you break it down. So the extra amount of generation needed, you know, basically assuming we don't utilize the current generation force in the US for AI, we think is roughly 99 gigawatts. Now, if you think about how that would be powered, it'll be majority renewables. And so what does that mean? Well, it means when you think about the growth of solar capacity and wind capacity, it's going to substantially increase. And just to frame it, currently Bloomberg New Energy Finance see that growth in solar per annum in terms of capacity around about 8% per annum. That could double to 16% with the extra demands for AI and the power demands needed there. You think about wind. Wind currently sits at about 18% per annum growth in capacity to 2030. That could go up to over 30% per annum in terms of extra capacity. So it's not only driving that greater demand for data and helping to achieve those AI data demand objectives, but it's also helping to decarbonize economies. So that is a massive, massive theme, and certainly we have been seeing that play through in a number of our names over the last 6 to 12 months. Just one more point, and one more theme that's been emerging is really the growth in power networks, and we're seeing it mostly in places like the US and Europe, but also all around the world. You know, when I started in the industry, and I won't tell you what my age is, but when I started in the industry, power networks were growing at 1 to 2% per annum. If you think about what they are expected to grow at over the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to be over 8% per annum. And why is that? It's resiliency, capital spend. It's linking all these renewable assets to the grid, so basically decarbonisation spend. And the beauty of all of this is it's wrapped into a regulated asset base and you earn a regulated return off it. So that's also an emerging theme and certainly one that's powering our IRRs to look so attractive at the moment.
Thanks, Shane. That was such a wealth of information, and thank you for your time today.
Yeah, pleasure, Jan. No, it's always great to talk to you. And yeah, really, it is a very exciting time for the space. We think valuations are very compelling, a number of very strong themes. And with a space that is very much an essential service, we think now is certainly the time you should be investing in infrastructure.
Thanks, James. So just to wrap up, over the past 18 to 24 months, due to the rise in real bond yields, as well as the narrow market breadth that we've seen, infrastructure as a group has underperformed, but we believe this is short-term sentiment driven. From a fundamental perspective, infrastructure companies are in great shape. They are passing through inflation, which is slowing down into their earnings profile. And there are many strong thematic drivers that Shane has outlined, such as decarbonization, localizing of the supply chains, and more recently, AI and data growth. From a timing perspective, we think now could be a fantastic opportunity to allocate into the sector, given its attractive valuation as signaled by our forward 5-year IRR. And if real yields stabilize from here, we can expect infrastructure to perform well.